after my crazy day, my packed commute, all those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. Punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Whew! Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Carlos. A little sad, just a little down. Houston Astros did win the World Series. I'm happy about that. Woo-hoo! I do like the Dodgers, yeah. But I was glad to see the Astros win, a team there for Texas. My Buckeyes are headed for the toilet bowl, I'm afraid, though, after that magnificent loss to Iowa last Saturday. Yeah, but the Browns did not lose last weekend. They had another successful bye week. They have not lost on a bye week yet, but I'm going to tell you, if anybody can figure out how to lose during a bye week, the Browns will figure it out one of these days, but they haven't so far. But, Carlos, golf is still going on around the world, so let's talk some golf. Hey,
Let me tell you one thing before you keep going.
Okay.
You keep going.
All right.
Yeah. You talk about the Browns and not losing. I have a bet. I mean, my team is going to be worse than yours. You know that my beloved 49ers have not won one.
They suck.
They have not lost on the bye. So we have to see, and everybody has to know that Fred and I will be pulling to see who's going to be the worst 0-16 team this year. Okay.
Do they play each other? They would tie at 0-0.
They would tie. They would tie.
Yeah.
Before winning, they both would tie. Yeah.
The Browns are absolutely horrid. Every year I think, oh, they'll be a little bit better this year because they couldn't be any worse, and they're worse. I don't know how they do it. They exceed themselves every year. They just keep getting worse and worse.
They're getting good rookie quarterbacks here,
so they pass on them. So.
They're getting the wide receiver this week, and Josh. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. Well, until he smokes some dope again, you know, he'll be gone. Yeah.
Let's talk golf.
There's no future in talk. You're breaking up, Carlos. So I don't know if you're gonna have to change microphones or something, or you got a loose wire or something connection, but you're breaking up pretty bad. Hey, Carlos. Justin Rose won again on the European Tour. Patrick Cantlay won really ugly in Vegas. And Tiger says the USGA should roll back the golf ball. Carlos, let's talk some golf. Let's go.
I assure you he wants to roll it back because, of course, he cannot hit it that far anymore. But we'll see. I don't know.
I'm going to dispute that. I'm going to dispute that statement here a little bit. He says he can't believe how far he's hitting it.
I heard that, but poker players say those things. I don't know. Well, let's go to it. Let's go to it later. Let's go to the Weekend Backspin where we recap this past weekend's action. And Fred, the race to Dubai got started. The final three tournaments on the European Tour are underway. Tell us all about the first leg of them.
Well, there was high drama down the stretch at the Turkish Airlines Open on Sunday. Nicholas Coulthard made his third consecutive birdie at the 17th hole to get to 17 under, and he and Justin Rose headed to the 18th tee tied for the lead. Meanwhile, Dylan Fratelli, playing just ahead of Rose and Coulthard, holed a 12-footer to also get to 17 and in the clubhouse, with the leaders coming from behind him. So Coulthard could only manage a par at the last, but Justin Rose rolled in his birdie to take the title at the beautiful Regnum Carey Resort in Antalya. That gave him back-to-back wins and moved even closer to Tommy Fleetwood at the top of the Race to Dubai rankings. presented by Rolex. The Turkish Airlines opens with the first stop on the race to Dubai's final series, and like last week, Rose made a surge at the end to take the title. With 1.339 million euros that he won in China at the WGC HSBC, and then another 985,000 euros in Turkey this week, Rose is only 139,000 behind Tommy Fleetwood and could easily close that gap this week in South Africa. Rose is seeking his second European Tour season-long title as he won the Order of Merit in 2007. Veteran Padraig Harrington was solo fourth, one more shot back at 16 under par. Thorbjørn Olesen, Kiradesh Afibanrot, Eddie Pepperell, Shane Lowry, Julian Suri, and Fabrizio Zanotti rounded out the top 10 with young guys Matthew Fitzpatrick and Thomas Peters, along with Matthew Southgate tying for 11th. Peter Uihlein was 14th. Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood were among a group tied at 20th. The newest Race to Dubai rankings still have Fleetwood leading, but Rose is hot on his tail. Something sad that came out last week, Danny Willett ended his very forgettable 2017 season with a torn rotator cuff. It's preventing him from playing. Willett began the year as a defending Masters champion, ranked 11th in the world. His poor play all year has forced him down, clear down to 82nd. That's a big fall for a world-class player in one year. He lost his caddy this year, who quit during the RBC Heritage, and changed swing coaches to Sean Foley. So it's been quite a year for Danny Willett. He's a mess right now. He needs to get healthy, and he needs to find something positive in his golf game. He and his wife are expecting their third child next month. He can definitely use the time off. As we've said all year, the Rolex series of events have given the European Tour an added punch and given the best European players a reason to stay at home and play rather than rush off to the States to play on the PGA Tour. So, Carlos, we're wrapping up the season on the European Tour. We got this week and then the finals in Dubai. But it's been a pretty good year on the European Tour. Keith Pelley's done a great job kind of moving that tour in the right direction, and this Rolex series has been a really positive thing for them, don't you think?
Oh, totally agree. I mean, it's been a difference maker for the European Tour, and Justin Rose seems to be really getting back to form, maybe one of the best of his career. He's joining right now Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy as the only man that has followed up a WGC title with a victory in their next tournament start. And he now has that Rolex Series title to add to his U.S. Open, his Olympic gold, and his two WGC wins. Like you mentioned, he's now in second place on the Race to Dubai standings, just behind Fleetwood. And just to add a little bit to what you said, he's looking to finish the season as number one for the second time in his career. He topped the standings back in 2007, but Tommy Fleetwood is guaranteed to be number one on the final, on the tour finals, because Justin Rose is not playing this week. So Tommy Fleetwood will head to be number one on that final, and Justin Rose will be number two. And that will be it. I mean, I think Justin Rose right now has to be the favorite to win the Race to Dubai. You wanted to add something, Fred?
No, that's okay. Good.
Okay. So let's talk about the LPGA, the Toto Japan Classic. Chongqing Fang of China, she captured her second straight LPGA Toto Japan Classic after finishing two strokes clear, thanks to a final round of 4 under par 68 on Sunday. She finished two shots ahead of Japan's Ai Suzuki, who fired a final round 4 under par 68 as well. In third was Sweden's Anna Nordqvist, who finished with a shooting of 66 on that final round. The world number four, Chongqing Fang, said it was a mission accomplished after that win. This win marks Fang's second win of the season following her one-shot triumph at the LPGA Volvic Championship in May. You know, her final round started off a bit shaky when she bogeyed two of her first three holes, but then she settled and was 4 under par through her final 11 holes.
it turned really into a match play situation with Japan Suzuki, who had a chance to leapfrog Fong through the back nine. But any time that Suzuki was making a birdie, it seemed as though Shan Shan would answer with one of her own. So she really couldn't capitalize on her opportunities late on that round. And a bogey on the final hole really sealed it for Shan Shan. The highlight of the third-place finisher, Anna Nordqvist's round, was a hole-in-one on the par 3 third. Now to go along with two victories, this marked her sixth top 10 finish of the season. Lisette Salas is red hot. She finished at 13 under after firing a 4 under 68. Her fourth place finish was her fourth top five result in her last 5 weeks. She is red hot. Seven golfers finished at 12 under and tied for fifth, including Moria Yutanagar. And yes, we're not talking about Aria on the top anymore, who notched her fifth top five of the year. And Lydia Ko, who continues her return to form, she recorded her fourth top five in her last 7 starts. Other notable finishers were Charlie Hall and Se-young Kim at T12. Stacey Lewis, Ingi Sean, and Angel Yin were among the 9 who finished tied for 15th. So-yeon Ryu, Lexi Thompson, and Brittany Altomare, along with Jody Warshadov, were among those who were tied for 33. Brooke Henderson, T42. Michelle Wee, T46, Suzanne Pedersen, and Haru Nomura, T52, Arya Yutanagarn. This is incredible. Solo 70th place. Man, I cannot believe that 1 year ago she was on top of the world. And Daniel Kang withdrew before the start of the second round, citing an injury. She traveled home and will rest up before the final event of the 2017 season, which is next week's CME Group Tour Championship. Former world number one, So-yeon Ryu, said she would be taking this week off in order to rehab her still-injured shoulder as she's trying to make a push for Player of the Year honors. Now, you heard me right. I said former number one because 2017 LPGA Rookie of the Year, Sang-yeon Park of South Korea, has become first LPGA Tour rookie to reach number one in the world. You know I had to say that. So Sang-yeon is replacing So-yeon Ryu atop the women's world ranking that was yesterday without playing last week. Ryu lost this number one ranking after 19 weeks when she failed to finish in a tie for sixth. The 24-year-old Park won 10 times on the Korean LPGA Tour. She won the U.S. Women's Open and has already clinched, like I said, the LPGA Rookie of the Year. She has a chance to become the first player since Nancy Lopez to win Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year in the same season. She's playing in China this week before next week's season-ending CME Group Tour Championship in Naples, Florida. So she does have a great opportunity for that. I mean, we're going to be talking about the Blue Bay LPGA in China a little bit later. But, Fred, I have a question for you. Last year, after the Olympics, I mentioned this, and I want to bring it up again. With Shan Shan Fong's bronze-winning performance, her career success, and especially when the way she performs when the LPGA is playing in its Asian swing. I mean, last year she won 2 of those tournaments. She won 1 here. She was 3rd, 2nd, and 1st now. I really, truly believe it's something, her performance there, that could open the floodgates for increased participation in her home country, which is a golf-starved country, China. Do you think that, I mean, could be that Shan Shan Fangs become China's Sayre Park?
No. You know, the people want to play, the kids want to play, but the government is making it so difficult on them over there. There are pockets, I mean, you know, they seem to be somewhat inconsistent. They don't want people to play golf. They feel it's too bourgeoisie or whatever you want to say it. You know, I just don't see China embracing golf. You know, last year, now the PGA China Tour is going to be back. Last year, they had to cancel it because they didn't get some forms filled out right or something, some kind of little technical thing that seem pretty stupid to me, but, I mean, they seem to be making it very difficult to play the game there. And so, yes, Fong can be seen as a role model and influence young children or juniors to play the game, but if the government makes it more and more difficult, I don't know. You know, you and I have said for a long time that China is a vast, untapped, you know, land of great golf potential. And, you know, I think probably within 15, 20 years, someone will come out of China and dominate maybe the next Tiger Woods will come from China. I don't know. They seem to be so disciplined, and they work so hard at it that they seem to be able to master anything they put their mind to. So it'll probably be another generation yet, though. You know, maybe one of the guys that are playing now, and then one of his children or something. You know, he'll train them and help teach them, and they'll have a little bit better genetics, and so they'll be a little bit better player. But I don't know. For China, you know, for the women especially, I just don't see it growing that much. South Korea, you know, look what they've done. They're fantastic. But I think the government puts too much pressure on the players, don't you?
I totally agree. I mean, she could become if the government helps. But like you said, we have mixed signals from them. I mean, they got Greg Norman to coach their men when they were going to the Olympics, then they canceled it. It was that, like, I don't know. Then when Chan Chung won the bronze, they celebrated. They made some big news about it, and everything is shut off. So, unfortunately, I mean, they have the people. They have the interest. What I think is that maybe it could start opening the door for other players to get the recognition. Hey, there's golf. Chan Chung Fong won here, won there, won the bronze medal in the Olympics. But unfortunately, I have to agree with you. Unless the government starts supporting it, they're not going anywhere.
So anyway, I see Lydia Ko had another good week there in Japan.
No, she did, and she's really returning to form. I'm really looking forward to next year and see what she can bring up. I think she'll be back next year with a vengeance. I think she's getting there. We've seen this five top fives in her last seven, five top tens in her last seven starts. So she's really getting there, Fred. But hey, let's talk about the men on the PGA Tour. And that was a display of shot making. You told me that was there at the Shriners Hospital, right? For Children's Children's Open.
Yeah.
No.
Bad shot making. Bad. Of what you don't want to do.
I'm sorry. I saw shot making, and I thought it was. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the final round of the Shriners Hospital for Children Open in Las Vegas last weekend was not a pretty affair. As golf tournaments go, I began watching on Sunday as the leaders made the turn for home, and suddenly a circus of errors broke out. I mean, it was just awful. You know, I was texting you. It was terrible. TPC Summerlin is known for low scoring with lots of birdies and eagles. 20 under par for the week may get you a top 10. Andrew McGee and Stuart Appleby both posted 31 unders, but that was over 90 holes in their wins here in past Las Vegas tournaments. Cantley's -9 was the highest winning score in Las Vegas by five shots since Gary Koch's 14 under in 1988. Now, in the player's defense, windy conditions made scoring difficult through the first three rounds. But for the first 14 holes on Sunday, the wind was down and the scoring was better, and it was like perfect playing conditions. But when it counted most, the afternoon wind was up, and between the wind and the pressure of the situation, these untested players at the top of the leaderboard just failed, and Patrick Cantlay remained as kind of the least suckiest. I guess he was the best of the worst in the playoff, I guess is what you could say. With the wind blowing, the 18th hole, a 456-yard par 5, which is disguised as a par 4, became a simply unplayable. None of the leaders were able to even sniff the green in regulation. the best of the bad bailouts tend to be in a greenside bunker, which left a severe downhill shot to a pin that seemingly sat in the lake that was actually bordered the left side of the green. But if you were up there from that bunker, and so Cantley chipped out of the bunker. I thought it was going to be a great shot. I mean, it had height. It dropped on the green nice, and it was so steep there, it just kept rolling and rolling and rolling. It actually rolled off the green, and if they hadn't cut the side of the bank a little bit higher, it would have rolled in the water. And he hit nearly a perfect bunker shot. So, you know, between the stupidity of the golf course design, the wind blowing, the pressure on these untested rookies or, you know, relatively new players, let's say, it was not good golf to watch. 46-year-old Alex Cheka, who got his round in before they turned on the fans, fired an excellent 63, moved up 27 spots on the leaderboard, and posted his 9-under par as the leader in the clubhouse while the real leaders were just beginning the back nine. And at the time, they were two shots better at 11-under par with 7, 8, 9 holes to play, and they end up backing up. And Cheka just sat in the clubhouse, had his lunch, took it easy, and watched everybody come back to him. So he was kind of the only smart guy, as it turned out. He could have packed up and gone home, but he decided he'd wait around and see, which turned out to be a smart thing. The leader at the time, J.J. Spahn, completely lost it on his back nine and finished with a pair of doubles to drop 9 spots for a T10. Bryson DeChambeau had a shot. He was at 9-under through 13 holes, but bogeys of 14 and 17 left him at T7. Bo Hostler was in position but couldn't make a birdie on Sunday. You know, if Hostler would have done anything on Sunday, he'd have won this thing going away. 2 bogeys left him with a 73 and a T7. Chesson Hadley, man, he was right there again. He continued his strong play, and he, too, was in contention. He carded 5 birdies on the front with a lone bogey for a 431, but didn't make any birdies on the back. Plus, he made a bogey at the last hole, and so that left him at 8-under, one shot shy of the playoff. Patton Kizzire was another player who got in before the winds began to blow and posted a beautiful 64 with a 5-under par 31 on the back nine. So it could have been done. You know, these guys, Kizzire did it. He moved up 25 spots for a T4. He would end up also 8-under par, one shot out of the playoff. Wee Kim was playing with the final groups and looked good with 5 birdies on the back nine. But the 18th claimed yet another victim as he made bogey at the 72nd hole and was left tied with Cheka at 9-under. Cantley, seeking the capper on his amazing comeback from personal loss and back injury, turned to front nine and 2-under par and rattled off 4 birdies from 11 through 14. But a pair of bogeys at 17 and 18 dropped him back to minus 9. This thing, you know, Cantley should have won it in regulation. Those bogeys at 17 and 18, you just can't do that. So it was definitely Cantley's tournament to win, and, you know, he just couldn't seal the deal in regulation. So they go to playoff. Cantley, Cheka, and Wee Kim, they return to the 18th tee for the playoff. Not one of them could manage a par on the very first playoff hole. It was confidence most ugly. I mean, they had to make like 5-6-foot putts to save a bogey to stay in the playoff, okay? They returned to the 18th. It's so much fun. They had to go there one more time. And then the second time, Wee Kim made a double, check a bogey, and Cantley finally managed to get a par and put this tournament out of its misery. So congrats to Patrick Cantley, a guy that has had more of his year of tough breaks. It was 6 years ago, Carlos, when he had that marvelous summer on the PGA Tour, and we named him a can't-miss kid from UCLA. Sometimes, Carlos, life gets in the way, but if you persevere, keep your head down, and work hard, sometimes it just works out all okay. On a final note, too, A.J. McInerney, the young Web.com Tour pro, that was at that terrible attack during the country concert in Las Vegas a few weeks ago, was in the field on a sponsor's invitation and made the most of his opportunity. He posted 71, 70, 70, 67 to collect a T10, help his chances of playing more on the big tour going down the road. We'll probably see him on the PGA Tour probably next year, maybe. Back to you, Carlos.
Definitely. He really played well, especially there at home. But this, I remember when we used to talk, like you said, about Patrick Cantlay before those back injuries started making him struggle for much of his early PGA Tour career. I saw him twice at the Puerto Rico Open play, and, you know, he had the world up in front for him. I mean, he could have reached the top the way that he was going. But like you say, it's great that he persevered. He never backed down. He knew he was going to be back, and this was a great victory for him, whether it was a bad play at the end by the others and even him, but he was the one at the end that played the best, or at least the least worst, to win it, right?
Yeah, the least worst.
That, yeah. If he began the season ranked outside of the top 1,500 on the official World Golf ranking, he's now into the top 50 and now has a two-year exemption on the PGA Tour. That takes a lot of the weight off of his back right now, and, you know, maybe that will help with his back injury. I mean, I'm just joking about that, but definitely mentally for him it's a triumph, not only with this win, but definitely for him to know that he can do it. And he said it, he knows how to practice and prepare for a tournament so he can do what he wants, and he feels like he can play well and compete with anybody as long as he's keeps healthy. So we are certainly going to keep seeing more of Patrick Cantlay moving forward. Let's talk about the European Tour Challenge Tour. Okay, the NBL Golf Classic Grand Final, where Clément Sordet waved the flag for France in Oman after keeping his cool to win and secure his European Tour card for next season. The 25-year-old had been in and around the leading pack for the first 3 days and timed his surge perfectly, building on his one-shot lead from Friday and never looking back. Sordet, who began the week 12th on the road to Oman, bolstered his hopes of promotion to the European Tour with a stunning hole-in-one during the second round. His effort on the 184-yard hole pitched 8 feet short of the flag, then kick off the surface before slowly trickling into the cup for a hole-in-one. A fourth round of 70 was his least flashy of the weekend, but he stayed on the course. And when the overnight hopefuls such as Argentina Stanislav Goya and Oliver Lindell of Finland drop off, victory at the spectacular Greg Norman-designed Almuş Golf Course not only backing 71,600 euros, but saw him come second in the road to Oman with the top 15 finishers graduating from the Challenge Tour and receiving a European Tour card. Sordet's 15-under par topped second-place Swede Marcus Kingholt by 2 shots. The Swedish star Kingholt climbed from 10th to 5th in the road to Oman standings and feels the added pressure of playing in a grand final helped him perform to his optimum level. As you might remember, and if you haven't, Kingholt gained a lot of attention in the 2015 Nordea Masters when he became only the third amateur in European Tour history to take a 36-hole lead. But despite a low finish of 35th in Muscat, finished Tapio Pulkkinen topped the road to Oman standings and earned an extra 30,000 euros for a superb season. So Tapio was the winner of the Challenge Tour. Well, we can say, you know, drama was inevitable in the road to Oman with finals, with only 15 European Tour cards up for grabs. Brooks Koepka's younger brother Chase, whose decision to follow in his brother's footsteps earned him a card for next year's European Tour. The 23-year-old finished 9th on the money list after his 33rd place finish here. England's Stephen Brown finished 12th. Brown won the 2011 English Amateur Championship and was a member of the victorious 2011 Great Britain and Ireland Walker Cup team. The two unlucky professionals that missed out, that were in and then out of the top 15, were Sebastian Heisel
and Robin Scott Segrist, as they were replaced by Scott Fernandez, who climbed from 22nd to 14th with a tie third finish, and Bradley Neal, who took the 15th and final spot with his final putt. He holed a 3-foot putt on the 18th for par, 3-under on the day and 8-under for the tournament. He was 18th entering the tournament and made with that final the 15th and final spot to earn the European Tour card. While heartache was inevitable for some, there was far more reason for festivity after an unforgettable week there of golf in Oman. Fred, this tournament is just a sign of what's to come for the burgeoning golf scene in Oman, which is really rising, which is capturing the imagination of golf fans around the world. That golf course is incredible, and definitely the Challenge Tour has a great place as its tour finals.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Chase Koepka, you know, there's guys that go over there to Europe and come up through the Challenge Tour and then on the European Tour. That's kind of come in like through the back door, but you know what? I like that. I like those guys going over there and seeing the world and doing that when they're young. I think that's a good deal. Carlos, still in Europe, the Ladies European Tour had an event in Abu Dhabi, also in the Middle East. Aditi Ashok won over there with rounds of 67, 66, 68, 69. Got her to 18 under par. She finished just a stroke ahead of Georgia Hall to take home the first place check of 70,000, almost 71,000 euro. Ashok is still a teenager. It was her third Ladies European Tour win already in just 12 months. And she began the final day with a 2-shot lead and kind of was in cruise control for most of the round. She made a little bogey at the fifth, but bounced back with 6 birdies in the next 11 holes, and so had a 4-shot advantage with 3 holes to play. So she did make a 4-putt on 17, which, kind of hurt, but she still had the lead going to the 18th and was able to close the deal. So, Carlos, we've been watching both Hall and Ashok, and they're going to be contending with Ko, Henderson, and the rest of the top women players of the world for quite a few years to come, I think. So, also, I want to mention, before we wrap up the backspin, that the Eastlake Cup was held last week. What is the Eastlake Cup, you ask? Well, it features the semifinalists from both the 2017 NCAA Division I men's and women's golf championship teams from earlier this year. They play the event at iconic East Lake Golf Club, the old home of Bobby Jones in Atlanta. And it's the same course that they play the FedEx Cup Championship on every year. This year, the women's division invitees included a reigning national champion Arizona State, runner-up Northwestern, Stanford University, who won the NCAAs in 2015, and USC. The men's division included a 2017 NCAA Division I champions, Oklahoma, and then 2016 national champion, Oregon, which were the runner-ups this year, and two-time East Lake Cup defending champion, Illinois, plus, oh, yeah, they threw in Vanderbilt in there. Well, Vanderbilt came out the big winners on the men's division as they won the stroke play portion, then defeated Oregon in the semis and thumped Illinois, a two-time East Lake Cup champion, in the championship match. On the women's side, the Lady Trojans from USC got past their Pac-12 rival and reigning NCAA champs Arizona State to capture the East Lake Cup for the women. So congrats to Vandy and USC for their big wins at the East Lake Cup. Carlos, that wraps up the Backspin 49.
And with that, we wrap it up. And now let's go to what we call the forecall or the quick previews of the week ahead and what's going to be happening this week. We're going to talk about all the tournaments in the major tours, starting with the big one. On the Champions Tour, there is the Charles Schwab Cup Championship, where Bernhard Langer is looking to win it for the first time in his career. It's incredible. He hasn't won it. Fred, give us all the details about this tournament.
Yeah, they're going to the Champions Tour resumes this week with the final event of the year for the old guys, the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. It's just three rounds, though, 54 holes, and they hold it at the Phoenix Country Club out in the desert. Bernhard Langer, you remember him, who has dominated the senior circuit like no golfer ever before, will be trying to claim his fifth Charles Schwab Cup title, fourth consecutive. Only the top 36 are left standing after the two previous playoff events, the Dominion Energy and the PowerShares QQQ. Langer won both of those, but the points reset this week, and according to the format, anyone in the top five in the Charles Schwab Cup standings, who includes Langer, Scott McCarron, Kenny Perry, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Kevin Sutherland, can win the $1 million bonus. However, if Langer continues to play the way he has all year, no one really has a shot. Langer has won seven times this season, including three of five majors, and has set a new money record with $3.6 million. If he does win this week, he'd win another $440,000, which would push him over the $4 million mark for the very first time ever on the Champions Tour. Oh, by the way, Langer has done all of this playing in only 21 events, four fewer than McCarron. Interesting stat, of the 23 weeks in the Champions Tour season this year, Langer has had held the lead on the money list 21 of those 23 weeks. You can catch all three rounds of the Charles Schwab Cup Championship this week on the Golf Channel, Friday through Sunday, beginning at 4 p.m., Carlos.
Yeah, remember that only the top five finishers in the Schwab Cup earn bonus money. Right now, those five, Bernhard Langer, Scott McCarron, Kenny Perry, Miguel Angel Jimenez, and Kevin Sutherland, only have to win the tournament to claim also the $1 million bonus. Hey, let's talk about the European Tour, where the Race to Dubai is hitting the second of three. That's going to be the Nedbank Golf Challenge that will be played at the Gary Player Country Club in Sun City, South Africa, which is a course that plays at 7,831 yards. This is long and even longer. Plays at a par 72, thank God. The purse is $7.5 million. The defending champion is Alex Noren. Justin Rose, like we talked about, pulled to within 134,839 points of Tommy Fleetwood by winning last week, but he's not playing the Nedbank Challenge, meaning Fleetwood is assured the lead going into the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai next week. Henrik Stenson, at number 11 in the Race to Dubai, has withdrawn from the tournament because of sore ribs. He hinted it stemmed from a promotional stunt at the HSBC Champions, in which he, Dustin Johnson, and Hideki Matsuyama were suspended by ropes. I do not know why would you do something like that. But hey,
yeah. Did you see the picture of those guys hanging out there? Why would you do that? That is just ridiculous. He should sue those guys.
I don't know. And especially three of the best players in the world. I mean, get three guys to do it, but if you want to do a stunt. But why them? I mean, that's what happens. Paddy Harrington finished fourth last week, matching his best result of the year. He tied for fourth previously in the Scottish Open. The first edition of this tournament was called, back then, the Million Dollar Challenge. It was in 1981. It featured a five-man field of Johnny Miller, Seve Ballesteros, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and Lee Trevino. Miller beat Ballesteros in the playoff. How time has passed. I mean, Nick Price was a four-time winner of the event. One of those victories was in a playoff against Tiger Woods in 1998. How has the time passed? The course is the second longest. Yes. Yes.
You know, this is how old I am, but I mean, 1971, that was a big deal. The Nedbank, you know, I mean, $1 million. Five guys playing in 1971. I mean, that was like lining up five guys and playing for about $20 million today. I mean, it was a big deal. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes. Let's not talk about that because, you know, it'll make me feel old now, too. That's why I kept going. That's why I didn't stop. You know, I just said, "How
yeah.
time has passed."
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry to bother you. But you are old. So.
Okay. Let's keep going. Let's keep talking.
say, you know, this course is the second longest in European history, behind only the Copperleaf Golf and Country State, which is 7,964 yards, that hosted the Chawani Open in 2014. If you want to watch it on television, you have to be Thursday through Sunday. It's going to be from 3 to 9 a.m. on the Golf Channel, Fred.
The PGA Tour is in action one more time. They're south of the border for the next-to-last event of the wraparound season, the Old Classic at Mayakoba. This is the second visit to Mexico this calendar year, with the WGC Mexico taking the place of the WGC Cadillac that was held for years at Doral. This tournament is held at Playa del Carmen, Quintana Roo, Mexico, at the El Chameleon Golf Club at the Mayakoba Resort. It's a 6,900-yard par 71. A field of 132 players, including defending champion Pat Perez, will be vying for a purse of $7.1 million, with $1.26 going to the winner. Top names in the field this week, Chesson Hadley. Here's a guy right off the web.com tour, and we're talking about him as a major name in the tournament. He's just made this wraparound season his personal playground. In his last three starts, he's posted T3 at the Safeway, runner-up at Sanderson Farms, and T4 last week in Vegas. Hadley is seventh on the FedEx Cup money list and already earned over $1 million. Major championship winners Ernie Els, Zach Johnson, Retief Goosen, Stuart Sink, Graham McDowell, Jeff Ogilvie, and Webb Simpson will tee it up in Mexico. Past All-Classic champion Charlie Hoffman, who won here in 2014, will try to collect a second title here. Patrick Reed and Johnny Vegas are also working this week. It's a good week for the rookies to shine as the field is littered with the new kids on the block. The newest of those being 22-year-old Cameron Champ, who played collegiately at Texas A&M. He's previously made two starts on the PGA Tour as an amateur, 2017 U.S. Open and 2017 Safeway. At the U.S. Open, he was only one of two amateurs that made the cut. And after two rounds, he led the field in driving distance, was T8 on the leaderboard, eventually finished T32. He's already advanced through second stage of Q School, will compete in the final stage as he attempts to earn his Web.com Tour card for next year. But he could forego all of that if he would happen to win this week. There's a couple of Mexican-born players in the field, Carlos Ortiz, Roberto Diaz, Jose de Jesus Rodriguez, Oscar Fostro, and Abraham Anser. You can watch the Old Classic from Mayakoba on Golf Channel Thursday through Sunday, 1 through 4 p.m., and they're doing a replay every day, 7:30 to 10:30 in the evening, if you want to watch it in primetime, Carlos.
And the defending champion, Pat Perez, is the leader in the FedEx Cup. Pat Perez.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, he won last year in his third tournament back from shoulder surgery, and he's in another tear. Since the Dell Technologies 2 months ago, he won again the CIMB, finished no worse than T24, which was on the WGC HSBC, which has contributed to a career best number 18th, which back then in this tournament, he was number 271 in the world. He's up to number 18. That should tell you how good Pat Perez has been having his best year on tour. Ricky Fowler is playing because of the strength of field policy of playing a tournament that he has not been in 4 years. So that's why he's playing here. And to add to Chesson Hadley, he has finished second, third, and fourth, and already, like you mentioned, has gone over $1 million. That is nearly twice as much as he made in 19 events last year, leading the Web.com Tour money list. So that should tell you something about how he's playing, or the lack of the big top players that are. But anyway, he's playing really good right now, and he's in a real role. Let's talk a little bit about the LPGA, the Blue Bay LPGA. This week is moving to China for playing this tournament. This is the fourth year for the event. Will be played at the Jian Lake Blue Bay Golf Course in Hainan Island in China. this course plays at 6,778 yards and a par 72. The purse is $2.1 million with a winner's share of $315,000. Many of you may remember last year's nail-biting finish when Minjae Lee's birdie on the 72nd hole was enough to defeat a charging Jessica Korda by one stroke. Arya Yutanagar, when she was playing great, finished just one stroke further back. It will have a Wednesday start. With the time difference, it will be Tuesday night in the U.S. and finishing up on Saturday. Remember, they have to come back to Florida the next week to play the CME. The field will be led by Sungyeom Park, who's making her debut as the number one player in the women's world ranking. It will also include current top 10 players Chan Chan Fong, Anna Nordqvist, I.K. Kim, and Arya Yutanagarn. Players giving the event this week are Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, Inge Shang, Se-young Kim, So-yeon Ryu, Stacey Lewis, and Lexi Thompson. Last week, with a tie for 15th in Japan, Stacey Lewis became the 15th player to go over $1 million for the year on the LPGA Tour. Minjae Lee, who defends her title, is in line to become the 16th player to do so, unheard of in the LPGA. Chan Chan Fong has now three seasons with multiple victories. Would like to add to that this week. And to give you a glimpse of the parity at the top of the players on the top of the rankings on the LPGA, I mean, eight players have won multiple times on the LPGA this year. I.K. Kim leads with three victories. That's how big they're playing this in the LPGA. Players to watch, of course, Sungyeom Park, new number one. She may demolish this week field. Chan Chan Fong, she's the hottest player on the tour right now. Anna Nordqvist, she's playing well as well. I.K. Kim, biggest surprise this year, she will be looking for win number four. Minjae Lee, the defending champion, is playing well. Some long shots, if you want to look at them. Jessica Korda, this is the ideal course for her to break out of her slump. Lisette Salas, she's playing her best golf of the year. So, you know, with just two tournaments remaining, both the Player of the Year and Vair Trophy trophy awards are still up for grabs. So-yeon Ryu is leading there for the Player of the Year award, but Sungyeom Park and Lexi Thompson are right behind her. Park is the only player of the three who's teeing it up this week, so she has a great chance of starting to try to catch them. Lexi Thompson also is leading on the Vera Trophy, 69.147 over Sungyeom Park, who is 69.169. So that's another one that is close. Each winner, remember, of this will receive a Hall of Fame point. So if you want to watch it, television coverage will be there for you. But remember, time difference makes it Tuesday through Friday. All of those days starts out at 11 p.m. And if you want to stay up, it'll be until 3 a.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel, Fred.
Yeah, I'll let you do that, Carlos. Hey, before we get to the Par 5 news, I want to mention that the November issue of the Ohio Golf Journal will publish in the morning. It offers golfaholics a diverse collection of topics that cover every area of golf. Tips to help your game, rules explanations, equipment review, travel to the best golf resorts, history and opinion on current golf issues are covered every month. Ohio Golf Journal has some of the best golf writers that provide their knowledge on the game. In the November issue, we talk about how the Amateur Golf Alliance is helping amateurs, the things we are thankful for as golfaholics. We feature golf travel opportunities to Bryant Park in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Reynolds Lake Oconee on the Georgia-South Carolina state line. Plus, Ed Travis proposes that arguments to roll back the golf ball are dangerously wrong. We're going to talk some more about that in just a minute. So visit OhioGolfJournal.com, click on the cover and read the whole magazine or click on any article that catches your eye. Plus, don't forget to watch Back 9 Report TV on Roku for a different take on the golf news. Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our four call or quick previews. And just in case if my audio doesn't sound right, my computer is having problems, so I'm hoping that I don't get any more of them. That's the reason why I just saw that. But anyway, let's go.
You're sounding good. You're sounding good now. You're breaking up early, but you're sounding good now.
Yeah, but I just saw that. So it's just warning everybody if it starts to happen.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But let's talk about the par 5 news. And, Fred, for the third week in a row, we're going to kick it off with Tiger Woods again. What's going on now with Tiger?
Well, you know, I mean, he's preparing to come out of hibernation and play in the Hero World Challenge here in a few weeks. And so he's beginning to show up in the media highlights more and more as well. Last week, he agreed to do a short stint on fellow Nike endorsers, UConn women's head basketball coach Gio Auriemma podcast. He gave a little insight into the current state of his game and also said the golf industry needs to roll back the distance the golf ball travels. Tiger said on the show, "We need to do something about the golf ball. I just think it's going too far because we're having to build golf courses. If they want to have a championship venue, they've got to be 7,400 or 7,800 yards long. And if the game keeps progressing the way it is with technology, I think the 8,000-yard golf course is not too far away. And that's pretty scary because we don't have enough property to start designing these types of golf courses, and it just makes so much more complicated." Well, Woods, who's soon going to be 42 years old, went on to tell Auriemma that he has been awestruck at how far he has been hitting the ball in preparing to return to competitive golf. "I can't believe how far I'm hitting the golf ball. You know, he hasn't played competitively since February. He says, I'm back to hitting it my full numbers and not really trying to do that. I didn't realize how much I had dropped off because of the pain in my back. And from me going at it and hitting it normal, just because I just lived through it from day to day, and I really couldn't tell the difference. But now, I can tell." During an interview, which took place 2 weeks ago, the 14-time major champion said he would be in favor of a huge change in the game, rolling back the golf ball. USGA is already looking at, they're doing some research on what would the world would look like if they rolled the ball back 10%, 15%, and 20%. You know, Carlos, Gary Player said basically the same thing a few weeks ago, and Jack Nicklaus has been a proponent of a shorter ball for years. We've talked about that. We've reported on it. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have an article from Ed Travis in the November issue of Ohio Golf Journal that's going to talk about that. And we just really don't think that's going to be doable. I would be very surprised if that works, this bifurcation idea. Club makers, ball makers will go ballistic. I just don't think you can do it. In another topic, Tiger said he encouraged his caddy, Joe LaCava, to accept another caddy job, but Joe did not want to hear it. He said he would stay with Woods and wait for his return. With the time away from golf, recuperating from his latest back surgery, Woods felt LaCava may want to choose a younger, more active golfer, but Joe declined. Tiger does have him on salary, so Joe's not going to go broke anytime soon, but he's going to stay at home and wait for Tiger to come out and start playing again.
You know, I think Joey knew what happened to Stevie Williams, and he said, "No, I'm staying. Don't worry, I'll stay with you. I'm not going anywhere. Or I'll stay home. I have no worries. I'm still on the payroll, so I'll be here." Nothing happening.
There you go.
That's great to see that. He stick there. That's a great sign. And if Tiger Woods, I want to ask you, because I got this, I know the answer, but I want you to answer it for maybe the benefit of somebody else who has the same question that was asking me. What does it mean when Tiger Woods says he's hitting his full numbers?
Yeah, just, you know, before he had so much injuries, he knows within, you know, a foot of where he hits every iron and every fairway wood and every hybrid and every driver. So when he hits it on the screws and when he has the right numbers, he can drop the ball in 3 feet of that yardage every time. And I mean, you've heard Tiger in the past on camera when they've had him, you know, be a 1 yard draw or be a 2 yard draw or fade or something. You know, just you know, that's how those guys hit it that close. They know what they're going to hit it. We're going to talk more about this, Carlos, when we get into the technology part tonight. But with the use of TrackMan and the technology out, they've really been able to hone in their wedges and their irons every club and know exactly what distance they hit it. Not just the roll-up, but the carry in the air. They're concerned about where they drop the ball. That yardage, that's what they're concerned about.
That's a segue for what we're going to talk about later. That's why I made the question. But definitely, that's a little hint of what we're going to be talking about in a little bit on the practice range. So just getting you, teasing you on what we're going to be talking about. Hey, let's talk about a little bit more. Let me start with something that I will talk more about also later on, which is golfing great Greg Norman is looking to change the golf course and turn it into an entertainment hub to enhance on-course experience. The Greg Norman company, Verizon, announced Wednesday that they partnered with golf transportation manufacturer Club Car and GPS technology company GPSI on the Shark experience, which will provide golfers with a fully connected golf cart experience that delivers connectivity, content, and customization. Norman said at Sports Business Journal Sports Marketing Symposium that there would be three tiers of carts that bring the high-definition touchscreen displays. At the most basic level, the club car vehicles will enable the instant measurement of yardage of shots distances to the pin. The next level will include yardages, but it will be also with built-in speakers with Bluetooth connectivity to enable streaming music via Slacker radio with golfers pairing their devices to the cart. At the highest level, the carts will also enable golfers to watch live content while they're enjoying a leisurely day on the course. The content can include live sports, highlights from being in sports, entertainment and news, options that are currently available on Verizon's Go 90 app. The touchscreen displays can include the current scorecard, live sports scores, cashless payments, a map of the course, and golf tips with video content from the Shark himself. Hole-in-one technology, food and beverage order, shot tracer, and more will become available as the platform evolves. Greg Norman said Club Car was manufacturing the carts for the first quarter of 2018, and they would be gradually rolled out at select golf courses across the U.S. throughout next year. The pilot will be previewed by you, Fred, in the PGA Show in January. For Norman, the project has been 4 years in the making, ever since he found himself in a cart barn wondering why there couldn't be a screen in every cart bringing the kind of content already available in the hotel room. In May, the Greg Norman Company and Verizon announced they would join forces to bring innovative and disruptive technology to the golf industry. Verizon is the connectivity partner in this project, while Norman's company is financing it. One other potential partner that is in negotiations with Norman is the PGA Tour that made him famous. The cards could ultimately bring PGA Tour content to golfers who may want to follow the pros while they're playing their rounds. Ultimately, Norman, who's an Australian known for his aggressive style and his nickname the Great White Shark, is betting on customization as the connected cart will cater to user preferences. Fred, we'll be talking more about this in the practice range, so I'll leave it here for now, and then we'll expand there on our topic in the practice range.
Yeah, if you remember, he hinted at this, when we had the chance to interview him in May, and he wouldn't elaborate on what it was going to be. So I was curious to see what he was talking about here. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that more later. Hey, LaWine Mayer had an interesting article in Global Golf Post this week about women's golf suffering to attract one of the best teachers in golf, Pete Cowan, because he wants to avoid any negative press from a possible inappropriate touching accusation by a disgruntled female student. You and I have gone back and forth this week. This may be a topic for discussion for the future, and so we're just going to touch base on it a little bit tonight. But It's a really a very real issue in today's politically correct society. Carlos, I've long been cognizant of working with female golf students in the past. I did not want them to feel uncomfortable for one thing, but for the other, I didn't want to be considered a dirty old man or raise a doubt in anyone's mind. So, Cowan brings up a very real issue for any coach, teacher, or male trainer of any kind that works with female students. I'm surprised that he would go so far as to admit that he discourages women and refuses to work with them, which really surprised me. But personally, I enjoy working with women golf students because they listen much better than men. They try to practice what you're trying to. They absolutely do. They really try. You know, men, on the other hand, they always think they know what's best, and they're going to do it their own way. Even if they know it's wrong, they're going to keep banging their head against it. So, I've worked with little girls as young as 5 years old and more mature women in their 80s. They all want to enjoy the game of golf just like the rest of us and learn the correct way to have fun on the golf course. So, matter of fact, my wife, Pat, and I are currently working on a Facebook page for women who want to enjoy golf with their husbands. It's not really for public consumption as of yet, but when it is, I'll let you know more about it. You know, I've always been amazed and wondered how top women's college basketball coach, I mentioned Gino Auriemma earlier, how he deals with coaching his college women athletes for so long without incurring any problems. There's had to be some issues over the years for whatever reason, wrong, right, or indifferent. Sometimes teaching golf requires touching the student. And I have to tell you that in today's litigious society and media readiness to jump on any perceived slip, I have always been very conscious of how I approach any student, and not just female. It is unfortunate that we have to deal with these types of issues, but because a few unscrupulous coaches have created problems in the past, everyone must be more careful now. As for the original question, are women being hurt by it? I really don't think so. I know many women pro golfers who work with male coaches. Pete Cowan is not the only golf coach in the world that can help golfers succeed, Carlos. Are you on mute, Carlos? You're not talking.
No, I'm not.
Yep, you're breaking up. Yeah, you're breaking up. I still can't hear you. Carlos, you're breaking up. I'm going to go ahead and start my last story. I can hear you there. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
You good?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Why don't you do whatever you're going to do, and I'll go ahead and read this last story, and then you can finish up, okay? We're going to talk a little bit about sponsorship dollars. Sports sponsorship is very big business and most important for the health and continuation of professional golf as we know it. We have had an ongoing discussion and reporting of the continuing negotiations for TV contracts and or digital content production for the PGA and LPGA tours. ESPN sports business guru Darren Rovell tweeted a chart last week that was the result of a poll taken by Turnkey Sports, gathered from 2,000 sports industry professionals, and listed the best sponsorship sports to the worst. The NBA was ranked the highest, garnering 35% of the votes. The NFL was 28%, soccer was 11, Major League Baseball 10, NASCAR 6, the NHL 4, and golf was ranked the worst sponsorship opportunity with only 1% of the voters. Sponsorship spending in North America exceeds $21 billion, which is equal to one-third of total television advertising or one-half of all digital advertising. Sponsorship spending is the fastest growing segment of advertising and marketing dollars. More than 100 U.S. companies have sponsorship budgets in excess of $15 million. The largest sponsors such as Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Nike, and Anheuser-Busch spend well in excess of $200 million per year. I'm not sure why the NBA is ranked so high in this poll, but even if you discount them a little bit, they, along with the NFL, the Major League Baseball, and soccer, are reaping the most sponsorship dollars, and golf is not even an afterthought. Rovell is usually a solid source for this type of information, and even he was surprised at the low number for golf. This raises some very intriguing questions for golf in general and professional golfers in particular. The millions of dollars available for endorsement contracts and company sponsorship of golf-related content may be hitting a wall. Some pros may have to put their private jet up for auction if this trend continues, Carlos. Are you back now?
I'm back. Can you hear me?
I can hear you really well. Yeah, that's good.
Well, hopefully it doesn't go away. We'll see. Hey, let me try to talk a little bit about PGA America of America, who announced the extension of CEO's Pete Bevacqua's contract through December 2024. Bevacqua has served as CEO since November 2012, and his current contract was set to expire at the end of 2021. The PGA Board of Directors approved the extension at the 101st PGA Annual Meeting in Austin, Texas. Bevacqua guides the decisions and overall strategy of one of the world's largest sports organizations, serving this association nearly 29,000 PGA professionals. Under his leadership, the PGA designed and implemented a long-term strategic plan focused on the association's mission to serve the PGA member and grow the game. The plan outlines the PGA's strategic vision and 8 core member-focused and business-related initiatives. It also defines the PGA's constant pursuit of excellence and commitment to innovation and collaboration, the teamwork and talent exhibited in its culture, and a devotion to its diversity and inclusion throughout the association's programs and practices. Earlier this year, Bevacqua steered the announcement that the PGA Championship will be conducted annually in May for the first time in 70 years, beginning in 2019. The new May date positions the PGA Championship for continued growth by providing a strong landing spot on the golf calendar, access to world-class venues in new regions of the country, and the consistent major championships rhythm that golf fans can embrace from April to July. I mean, he has done a lot of things. We could be here for a whole show talking about what he has done in his term, but a leadership summit was one of the last things that he was also able to establish to encourage women to use golf in furthering their careers. He also facilitated relationships with state and local governments to bring the PGA Championship to historic public facilities such as New York's Bethpage Black in 2019 and San Francisco's TPC Harding Park in 2020. Fred Bevacqua joined the PGA of America back in 2012, and he was given then a 3-year contract. 1 year later, he was given a 5-year extension to end in next year. In March of this year, he was given a 3-year extension to run through 2021, and now an additional 3 years. Fred, I think he must be doing something right. What do you think?
Somebody likes him, don't they? I'm guessing that they keep paying him a little bit more money along the way, too. So, I think Pete's going to be in the PGA for a while. So I think that wraps up the Par 5 news, Carlos.
That do. And let's now go, before we go, this time before we're going to go to our practice range where we're going to be talking about technology and golf, we're going to have for you the VIG this time to preview this. And with us, we have Matt Frelick. He's a PGA professional and the VP of Sales and business development for Trackman. Trackman has developed a range app for your smartphone. So, Fred, if you want to give us a little bit about a preview of what we're going to be seeing here. I mean, hearing here.
Yeah, Carl's Golfland, which is here in Detroit, partnered with Trackman to give golfers the first driving range Trackman experience. Now, we've been able to go to your pro or your golf fitter, and they'll use TrackMan and get your numbers and, you know, use that to help teach you and that kind of thing. But now, for just the price of a bucket of balls, you can go to the driving range, download the app on your phone, set it right there beside you, and your numbers will come up for every shot. You won't have to be guessing, oh, that looked like it traveled 140 yards. You'll know that the screen will punch it up. It traveled exactly 135. It dropped. It rolled out another 3 or 4 yards. It had, you know, the launch angle, the spin rate. Everything will be right there. So it's really pretty cool. And we had a chance to talk with Matt Freelich when we were there, and he gave us a lot of great information, Carlos.
Okay, let's roll this interview. Okay, let's try one more time.
Your computer doesn't like
me. Let's go. No, she doesn't like me. I don't know. But this time it's not the computer. This time it's the Blog Talk. But let's start the practice range while this gets sorted out there. Let's go to the practice range here. We're going to talk about technology in golf, and let me do some introduction to what we're going to be talking. Picture yourself sitting at home watching a sporting event. No matter what sport or league you're tuning in at the time, there's a good chance that you will see a golf equipment commercial come on during a break in the action. And that commercial, with no doubt, guarantee you of becoming a better player with the new club, ball, or grip that's being hawked. This is by no means a new trend. I mean, everyone from Ben Hogan and Jack Nicklaus to Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy have told the general population that it can get better by playing with their new product. But over the past, I would say, 20 years, the technology and equipment has advanced at a rapid rate for players of all skill levels. While the advances have been great for clubs, sales, and television, the golf courses have suffered. Over time, the spike in distance has rendered many courses, including classics, obsolete. The best case scenario for a lot of these places is that they have the money and the available land to keep up with the search. But not every course is like Augusta National, who grew only 180 yards from 1940 to 2000, but has shot up an additional 450 yards in the last 15 years thanks to the power influx. In the process, it's changed the way that Bobby Jones and Alistair McKenzie intended it to play. It's hard to say where golf goes from here, but based on history, you can bet that more innovation and distance is on the way. So technology, TrackMan, flight scope, spin rate, launch angle, the ball, the clubs, the effects. Fred, oh my, is this all too much?
Well, you know, Carlos, when we talk about technology, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, the golf ball and club improvements. But technology is really making huge changes to golf everywhere. Matter of fact, I'll give you a little tease here. In the December issue of Ohio Golf Journal, I'm going to have about half the magazine is going to be talking about technology, from driving ranges to golf carts to the golf rules that have to deal with these technology advances. So, you know, technology is a big part of golf. You know, I think some of this stuff can be slightly confusing to the beginner or casual golfer. TrackMan and FlightScope are similar in that they can give the golfer accurate readings on the three most important factors of launch angle, ball speed, and spin rate. These are the most critical when choosing the right club for your swing. If you're a little more advanced, the numbers that will help dial in your swing to maximize distance, carry, and spin, you also get from this, but that's for the little bit more advanced player. For example, we're going to hear from Matt Freelich in the interview when we play it, that Dustin Johnson's good run of play over the last couple of years really began after he used TrackMan to improve not only his length, but dial in the exact yardages and spin rates with his wedges. Johnson's game took a quantum leap forward when he improved his wedge play, and we documented that. We talked about that as he was moving up. So, Carlos, you know, kids, you know, we got all these video games and they're technology savvy. I mean, little kids now from the age of three, they start having a tablet or a computer or something that they're playing on. And all this technology has to be like a millennial's dream, right?
Well, let's talk about a millennial's dream golf party, and that would be Topgolf. We've talked about Topgolf before, and if you haven't, let me say to you literally what a friend of mine said about Topgolf, and I have it here written. I'm going to read it for you because I asked him. He was for this particular topic. He said, if you haven't heard of Topgolf, then you're probably not a golfer. I found out about Topgolf last year through blogs, posts, tweets, and every other social media outlet available. I was very intrigued to see how a driving range was going to change the way we think about driving ranges. Simply put, Topgolf is the newest and greatest thing in golf since, well, golf itself. If you don't know, Topgolf is a driving range, target practice, bar, restaurant, concert, venue, club fitter, party, extravaganza. That's his quote, literally. Of course, he's not a big golfer or a golfer golfaholic, let's put it that way. He's just a casual player that likes to play from time to time, so he's not that into it. So this really attracts to those type of people. As you, I have gone to one here in the colony. I can tell you this. As you walk through the front door, of course, they immediately greet you. They ask if you need any assistance. Of course, they give you so many choices to do. They offer you, if you want, a tour of the place. They have all this. They have the private hitting bay with showers, bar, lounge chairs. I mean, all around the first, all you have is amenities. You have the TVs. If you don't worry if it's too cold, they have heater. If it's too hot, they have AC. So it's basically something that definitely attracts the millennials. But this is not something, even though it looks like it's a driving range, it's more for you playing games and have a party. It's more the distraction that you have around with all this music, loud music. And if you want to go there with your family and have a good meal, yeah, you can do that. But definitely, this is not something for serious golfer friends. I mean, yes, it's going to attract the millennials with all this connectivity and all these apps and all that, but it doesn't truly develop or attract to real golfers. After that, I don't think anybody there would feel like, okay, let me go and start getting some classes and get ready to play tournaments. This is just really an attraction for some people to go there and try to hit the ball somehow. And we are people here that we're two persons that are all for the development of golf and the race and of the game and growing the game. But this definitely, Fred, is not something for real golfers.
Now, I've had two people tell me that, you know, I asked them, you know, what they thought about it when they went to Topgolf. And they both said, you know, it's kind of like going to a bowling alley for golf, and that's exactly what it's like because you got the food, you got the beer, you know, it's a lot of stuff going on around. It's not really just for the golf, but you know, Carl, so I want to talk a little bit more about Carl's driving range. I talked about it briefly, but I did have the opportunity to go up there on the first day they were open to the public, and. For anyone that has visited a golf simulator and you see your numbers pop up on the screen after you hit your shot, well, that is exactly what is now available at a regular outdoor driving range. The app is simply downloaded on your smartphone. When you go up and you choose your hitting bay, you put your balls down, you log in the bay number that you're at, so that the radar equipment can pick up your ball flight when it leaves. And so it's going to record the flight, the spin, the launch, the carry, and the distance of every shot you hit. So you can break it down by shot. It'll average it for you. It'll keep a list of the whole thing. You can even then keep track and log in from session to session to see a progression. It's really good stuff. if you know what you're looking at. That's going to be the next thing. People are going to have to learn what numbers they're trying to get to and how to get there. They may have to have some training on that. But, Carlos, this new driving range app from TrackMan, this is really a big breakthrough for the average golfer. That TrackMan unit that you see, if you go to a PGA tournament and the guys are on the range using their TrackMan device, or you're getting a lesson and your teacher has a TrackMan sitting there, those things sell for about $30,000. So now the average golfer can experience a TrackMan session for just the cost of a bucket of balls. Now, like I say, understanding the numbers and using them to improve, that's a whole other matter. But this is really big. This concept, I'm sure, will grow at the larger ranges. It is quite expensive for the range to do it, but I'm sure the larger ranges are gonna want this thing pretty quick, actually. Yeah, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. You're breaking up again, Carlos. We can't hear you, Carlos. You're breaking up again.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, let's try it one more time. Okay.
Okay.
We talk about the shirt experience.
Yeah, we lost you. Yeah, we lost. Carlos, we lost you. You're gone.
How can you produce more than 90 carrier wins? Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, but it's really broken. Yeah. You're really broken up.
Yeah, this is not.
Carlos, I'm going to go on and talk about rangefinders for a minute, okay? Carlos, I'm going to go ahead and talk about rangefinders for a minute. You know, Carlos was going to talk about the shark experience. You know, he mentioned it briefly in the news section that you can get music and all this other stuff. But, you know, everybody seems to have a rangefinder. That's another aspect of technology that's just seemed to take in golf by storm. So you have these rangefinders seemingly in every golfer's bag, and it's just one more piece of technology that's being used by pretty much everyone. I personally am not a big fan of rangefinders. It seems everybody has one, and they pull it out, and they're shooting every shot. It's slowing down play, and at a time when everybody's trying to do something about slow play, it just seems like it adds to that for me. You know, I can walk up to a shot and tell you pretty much within 5 yards of what it is. I don't need a rangefinder most of the time for that. And if I don't, you know, the way I play 10 yards is good enough anyhow. As long as I know to carry the bunker or something, that's all I need to know. But you know, does it really matter for the average golfer if it's 100 yards spot on or if it's 115 to the pin? You know, the average golfer is hard-pressed to accurately repeat a 100-yard wedge shot anyway. So I don't know if it's really necessary for everybody, but, boy, everybody's got them. So rangefinders are one more thing, Carlos. Are you back?
I am back.
Carlos, we're not here.
Through the phone now.
Okay.
So hopefully you can hear me. Not as good, maybe. Well, it wasn't that good, anyways. Yeah.
No, I can tell you're on a different mic, but yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, you can hear me. It's not the same, unfortunately, but that's all I got for now. let me talk a little bit about the shark experience quickly, so we can move on from the topic and keep it going. What I wanted to say about the shark experience is that. Yes, this is another thing that I don't think it's truly designed to attract more players, or is it going to get me into the range? Yes, it might be something that the millennials. Greg Norman, of course, is saying that he's getting great comments from all types of age demographics. I truly don't think so, because the two traditionalist golf players, when I go to the golf course, if I really want to keep track of what my college team is doing or how the NFL is doing, or if I want to know how the PGA Tour is doing, I'll be home watching it. I don't need to. If I want to go to the golf course, I don't need any more distractions. And one of the things that I don't like, and one of the things that I've always been here proposing and trying to be a proponent of,
is to making the rounds faster. I don't see how this can help on that. This is just one more distraction that is going to be there. Of course, the millennials are going to be like, yeah, I have now Slacker Radio. I have CNN headlines. I have ESPN Sports Radio. Even cooking programming is going to be there at your fingertips. Yes, you can watch the Penn State, Ohio State full bill game for it. That would be great for you. But, I mean, this card's designed there with those speakers, and they want to have hear music. How you're not going to be disturbing other golfers who may be nearby? I mean, those speakers, which took months to design, are angled so that the bulk of the sound is directed at the driver and the passenger in the cart. But, man, if they put it loud like some of this kids do it, forget about it. It's going to be everywhere else. And one of the things that Norman is citing is what he calls the Topgolf movement, which is what we already talked about, Topgolf. So you see the trend. Everything is going towards that. And I think it's going to take away from what really they say is generating excitement from golfers who enjoy listening to music and keeping up with the latest sports headlines. But definitely, to me, it's going to do two things. One is going to create more distractions, and two is just really going to make the golf rounds longer. And really, there's going to be a clash between the two traditionalists playing golf and the ones that would like this. So that's my take on that part, Fred.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's going to be a distraction, and I'm not a fan. Some carts, they had the GPS, right there on the screen, you just touch it, gives you yardage, which I kind of like that actually, because, you drive your cart up there, boom, you punt, and it's there. You can kind of watch as you're driving up, it speeds up play actually. I like that. But to get music and all that stuff, that's not for me. Matter of fact, I play with some young guys, a couple times a year that are friends of mine, and they got their music going in their cart, and they got a playlist that they play, and it's more of a party atmosphere for them. And that's what they like. That's just what they enjoy. That's great. I do it once or twice a year with them, and that's fine. But I don't want a steady diet of that. Matter of fact, Carlos, I'm kind of working on a program lately of walking more and carrying my bag and not going on a cart. So I think we maybe even need to get more back to that, but that's a subject for a different day. But, Carlos, you were also going to talk about club fitting a little bit, I believe.
Yes, I will. And you need to remember that golf club manufacturers are in the business of selling golf clubs as a mass market. As a result, you can pretty much rest assured that you will find within their core specs a combination that will suit you just fine. So bear with me. Try not to get too uptight about what I'm going to say next. The main objective is to make sure the length you pick is right for your height, so you're comfortable at addressing, that the shaft flex is roughly matched to your swing speed, so you maximize your distance, and that the loft you pick won't give you any problems with trajectory. You can get most of the way there by trying out some buddies clubs or demoing a variety of clubs from your local golf shop. If you'd like some expert advice, a quick chat maybe with your PGA Pro or golf shop staff during a sample fitting session can quickly confirm you're in the ballpark. Many golf shops will routinely offer a simple fitting for free to prospective customers. Others will provide the service for a nominal fee, whether or not you're ultimately buying the club from them. Taking things a step or more like a leap forward brings us to the realm of advanced club fitting. There has been a tremendous surge in the popularity and utility of advanced club fitting in recent years. The benefits this can bring to your game, regardless of your skill level, well, they can be very real. In fact, Golf Digest recently did a cover story on club fitting that showed an average golfer can add as much as 17 yards to their drive when expertly fit and realize a significant improvement in accuracy and performance in their iron. The main difference between a simple fitting and an advanced club fitting session really comes down to technology. We're talking about a lot more than a pro watching you swing and using some marking tape here. Today's high-tech fittings involve state-of-the-art vector launch monitors and video many with full blow flight options. But by the time you're done, you have every conceivable aspect of your game scrutinized. I mean, from club head speed, ball speed, and spin rates, launch angle, side screen, and more. You walk away from an expert fitting session with a detailed list of specs completely dialed into your specific needs that you can use to buy your next set of clubs. But now, the question is it for the average golfer? Let me give you a quick example. This friend of mine plays about a 0.5 to a 2 handicap lately, and making a change to his equipment is not going to monumentally change his scores. But he says that if it can even give him the slightest edge of shooting a 74 instead of a 75, that is worth it. Shaving strokes is very hard to come by when you get down to that level. The main point here is that golfers who have higher handicaps stand to gain the most from playing the right equipment. At the level, you can eliminate a decent amount of strokes by getting fitted properly. Making sure your lie angles and shafts are right for your swing can potentially avoid serious misses and even boost your distances a significant amount. If you watch commercials on the weekend during the golf tournaments and make your purchase decision based on what driver or item set sounds best for you, then you really are making likely a mistake. But just because the average golfer thinks the newest set of tailor-made irons look cool doesn't mean they are the best for their swing.
I agree with you 100%. This is one area of technology that I think has really helped golfers and made a huge difference in using the proper equipment. It is for the beginner. Not maybe the guy that's just out there absolutely beginning or the young lady or whatever, but once you get the point, past the point of simply trying to get the ball airborne, and you can do that, you can play, and you start playing golf frequently, then your next step is you should invest in a club fitting and upgrade to a proper set of clubs from that. It will greatly help you. I just want to close up, Carlos, just a couple things real quick. Tom Lang, who's a good friend of mine and writes for the Detroit Free Press, really recently wrote a piece about the TrackMan driving range up there in Detroit, and he interviewed a couple guys that came out, and one of them was a really good golfer who was a two-time state stroke play champion, amateur champion in Michigan, and he said, you know, this is really a good way for me to focus and practice more efficiently to find out where my shots are going, how far my clubs are going, how closely to the pin. He said, frankly, I take it more seriously. It's a more focused practice session than I would normally have. Another gentleman who was 40 years old, a 6 handicap, drove clear to Detroit from Canton, which is about a 3.5-hour drive to try out the range. He said, I love it. He came to demo some different clubs and see the numbers and compare them against each other, and he was really impressed. He got the information he wanted. He thought it was very revolutionary, whether you want to play games or hit targets or just your gaps between your irons. It's incredible. So this thing is really getting good reviews, and as I said, I think we're going to see more of it down the road. Technology in general, Carlos, it's a good thing. You know, we got to embrace it. Even watching baseball now, they're talking about launch angles and ball speed and all that stuff because they're using the TrackMans at the park. So it's amazing stuff, and it's here to stay.
It is here to stay, definitely. So, like you said, we have to embrace it. It's just that there are going to be some differences in the approaches. There are some things like that, that Shark experience. I'm still not sold on it. But anyway, with that, we wrap up our practice range. Every week we pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it, and that's what the practice range was, technology. But now I do have Matt Frelich. So let's play that interview.
We are talking today with Matt Frelich, who is the marketing director for TrackMan in the Americas. He's a PGA professional and has been with TrackMan for some years. And Matt, welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Thank you for having me. Matt, you were telling me a little bit about TrackMan today and its development several years ago. Can you give us just a little bit of background how TrackMan really got started?
Yeah, so actually TrackMan is Danish-born, and the people who started the company actually own driving ranges in Europe, the four busiest. And for them, they thought that they could improve their business by being able to simply track a golf ball. That would allow the better players to know how far they hit every club in their bag, work on skills as far as hitting the ball closer to the pin. That's the best way to make more putts. But also allow competitions. That would make more people probably come from farther away to their driving range, but probably even stay longer, pay more. So that's where it really started. And this is now probably about 15 years ago when this process started. They didn't have devices that could accurately track a golf ball, so they had to go through quite a process to find ultimately the radar technology that they decided they had to develop themselves.
So TrackMan got a hold of the USGA, the PGA of America, the RNA, the PGA Tour. You did demos for these guys, made them immediate believers, and so you thought you had something.
Well, that's right. So as we talked about a little bit earlier, right, is that in the beginning it was to show someone that we could track the ball all the way. We didn't want to just start at the driving range, right, and tell the average golfer who thinks their 7-iron goes 160 yards in the air that it's really going about 120. So we really started in a process of starting at R&D companies like Ping, Callaway, Titleist, TaylorMade. Those were the first meetings. Those were the very first customers, the heads of R&D. And so once we were able to prove it to them and stick with them, because we learned a lot through that process. For example, spin rate came only after they told us how important spin was. Same thing with club delivery and things like that. But through that, then we got our space on the PGA Tour and started spending time on the practice range, where in the beginning it was only about which club is best for me. But then some pioneers on the PGA Tour started saying, hey, if I can hit this 100-yard wedge closer, then I'm going to actually be getting fewer putts. And that's where all of a sudden TrackMan's skills testing and all those things came in. And that's where those guys are really the ones you see on TV on top of all the leaderboards. Those are our best customers today.
Yeah, matter of fact, we were talking about Dustin Johnson for a minute, and working with him, yeah, he hits a long drive, and he's locked in that 325-yard cut that Butch has him hitting and all that good thing. But when he really started winning in a regular fashion, he dialed in his wedges, and he did that using TrackMan.
Yeah, that's right, and thankfully people can see that on TV. He uses it before he starts every round. But his purpose for TrackMan was not to spin rate down a little bit or up a little bit. It was all about hitting the wedges closer.
We're here at Carl's Golfland in Detroit, Michigan this morning, and you've rolled out a unique product here. You said the company started by golf course owners, and now you're coming full circle back to the golf driving range.
Yeah, this was the reason TrackMan was created in the first place. So we've had a great journey along the way to start, as I talked about, the top of the pyramid. Let's go to the most serious people, the engineers and R&D at all the major equipment manufacturers, the PGA Tour. Today we're in our third five-year agreement with the PGA Tour. But as you've just said, we are now finally back to the reason we started, which is the driving range.
My buddies and I, we're going to go out and play 18 holes. We drink maybe a couple beers. We're having a good time. We don't want it at the end. We're done with our round and say, hey, we need an emerging nine. There's nothing available. Hey, let's run over to Carl's Golfland. We'll each get a bay. We'll hit a few balls, and we'll compete out there. How do we do that?
So already our very first version of TrackMan Range app will tell you closest to the pin. So you can already, to the pin is a number that you got in there. So you and I can go to the range here at Carl's today and say, all right, to that yellow flag, closest wins, and TrackMan will tell us exactly who's closest.
And I do that on an app on my phone.
You do it on the app of your phone, so Android or iOS.
You've got Top Golf without the party atmosphere on the driving range for serious golfers.
Something like that, yes.
All right, Matt, is there anything, I'm forgetting anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I think come on out to Carl's to see it for yourself. They've got a great facility here. Carl's continues to invest in having the best driving range here in Michigan. And come on out. You'll love TrackMan Range.
For our listeners, TrackMan has continued to be a leader in technology in the golf ball tracking area. And if you're in Detroit, and I guess the second one of these is going to be in Dallas, so at the Dallas Golf Club?
Yeah, it's Dallas National Golf Club. So this is a public facility very much. Anybody can use this one. Dallas National is going to remain just for those few people that
you got to know a guy in Dallas.
You got to know someone that's really high up in Dallas. That's right.
Matt, thank you so much for being on Back Nine Report.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really high in Dallas. I mean, I'm here up north, like 20 miles. So, I mean, if it's higher, I don't know who, because it's going to be almost Oklahoma by then. So
I think Dallas. I think Jordan Spieth is a member at Dallas National. So if you know Jordan, he'll get you in.
Oh, okay, okay. No, I don't know him yet. I saw him once in Puerto Rico. But, so anyway, no, very interesting, and definitely, I'll try to see if I can meet somebody high up, and I'll give you personal information there. With that, we wrap up our BSG Very Important Guest of the Week, Matt Freelich. Let's talk about now our final pods. As usual, I start with mine, and this time I'm going to be talking about Emily Nash, who accepted an invitation via the phone from Annika Sorenstam to play in the Annika Invitational American Junior Golf Association Junior Tournament. Nash disclosed this via her Twitter account. As you might remember, Emily, who is 16, was the subject of our topic on the practice range last week, as she won the recent Central Massachusetts Division III Golf Championship, but was denied the individual trophy because she's a girl competing in a boys' team event. Of course, this doesn't make up for that travesty, but she's deserving of all these things that are coming good for her, and I am hopeful it keeps bringing more light to that issue in expectancy of some change. Emily, on her part, tweeted that she was so honored to receive a call and exemption to play in that February 12 to 15 tournament at Rieni Resort near Orlando, Florida, and we are really glad she's getting that opportunity. Hopefully, like I said, this starts to bring some change to that travesty that happened to her. And on my final pot, Jason Day has continued his long-held belief of family first, pulling out of the Hero World Challenge to support wife Ellie through the early stages of a third pregnancy. Day was due to tee it up at his native Australian Open in Sydney on November 23rd to the 26th before flying back to the Bahamas the following week, but will now forego the chance to be part of the Tiger Woods comeback to spend less time away from his family. That he pulls out of this one, to me, is no big deal. I mean, he missed the 2012 Open Championship to be at the birth of his first child, Dash, and the Australian Summer of Golf in 2015 for their second child, Lucy. Now, the couple's third child is due in June. So this means that Day's place in the 2018 U.S. Open is in limbo, and he even confirmed that he's likely to miss it, even though there is no due date yet for Ellie, and he's predicting that. So I'll ask him also for the lottery numbers to see if he can predict those and hit it, because predicting a pregnancy and getting that due date is incredible. That is really something. I mean, given the fact that the USA Open is the major where he's had the most success. But, hey, he's family first, and we respect that definitely. I think I would do the same. But his withdrawal coincided with countryman Mark Leishman's decision to also skip out on the 18-man field in Albany when Leishman decided to instead play in the Australian PGA on the Gold Coast. You know, Leishman, who is coming off the best season of his life, recently had his third child, a daughter called Ava, and also has a rule not to be on the road too many weeks in a row. So Tiger's comeback tournament lost two big names. Fred, coming into the field now in the Bahamas, our former Open champion Henrik Stenson, even though I don't know, he should be recovering from those ribs that he got hurt on that, I don't know, that thing that he did there at the WGC. And U.S. President Cup. Yeah, U.S. President Cup team member Kevin Chappell, who really has had also the best year of his career.
Yeah, that whole thing, that China thing with those guys hanging from straps, that was really stupid. Hey, Carlos, I'm going to do mine real quick here. Forbes magazine ranks the top earning deceased celebrities every year. And for 2017, Arnold Palmer, the golf legend who died September 25th last year, generates an estimated $40 million in post-mortem annual income for his estate. He's still out there making that money. That ranks him behind only Michael Jackson, whose estate earns an estimated $75 million a year. The rest of the top five, according to Forbes, peanut cartoon creator Charles Schulz, singer Elvis Presley, and singer Bob Marley. PGA is going to go to Olympic Club. The PGA of America has agreed with Olympic Club to host the 2028 PGA Championship and the 2032 Ryder Cup. That's a long ways away. Olympic Club has previously hosted USGA events, including five U.S. Opens. USGA was trying to negotiate the 2027 U.S. Open to be held at Olympic. The talks had stalled, and when USGA gave the 2027 tournament to Pebble Beach, Olympic jumped into bed with the PGA. Oh, my goodness. Another story, Rick Smith, the famed teacher, is moving to Doral. For years, Jim McClain was the head teaching professional at Doral, had his academy there. But he left last year, and Rick Smith is going to fill the void. He's very enthusiastic about it. He can't say enough about how excited he is to get going down there. So if you want to get some lessons from Rick Smith, you can jump down to Miami and see him there. Hey, Bubba, I can't say this, so I won't say it, but Bubba is out of his Volvo contract. That expired. They didn't renew it, so he's going to be looking at some new golf balls. Carlos?
Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Matt Frilich, PGA Professional MVP for Sales and Business Development for TrackMan. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. Still allowing. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always the great answer.
Has this ever happened to you? You put some money in a savings account with a great rate. But that promotional savings rate came crashing down. You deserve better. Take just 5 minutes and open a Capital One savings account online. You'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One NA, member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.